way that we were doing it, so we provided one as well.
Well, yeah, everybody normally does.
Hopefully.
If you have anything to add to hers.
Hopefully not too conflicting.
Yeah.
So what is the problem with the system?
Internet connection.
Internet. So you can't just bring the file up?
No, I can go to my, I can get my computer and bring it up. Oh, you have it.
You have it in there, so.
You have it.
What about what you sent?
If I do that, then I'm like, first.
Yeah, but I don't have to connect the connection, so I cannot open my emails either.
How come we didn't have this problem before?
We didn't have it. We were always using the IT projector, and then on Friday, he told me that that projector do not belong to IT. It's another department. So we brought the one that we have it, and it's just one internet cable that we have, so now Susan needs to use it. I'm sorry about that.
So if you go to your, if you go to your email, your email sent.
Yes, that is what I was trying to get here.
You just wanted to change the source.
Well, is that?
Have it.
Yeah, it's in your email.
Yeah, our old email was in there.
It should be there. I know. Okay. My sent one.
Yeah, you sent to us last week. That's what I'm looking at.
Wow, and this kind of.
May.
Why is that way back to May?
Where's my app?
Yeah.
Right on screen.
Yeah, it sounds like she's connecting.
No, it's, she's not.
Oh, it's offline, it's offline, yeah. It's offline. All right, is it seeing his iPad?
We just gotta change the source.
Oh, okay.
Can you do that?
Right here.
There we go.
Wow.
Wow, all right. You rescued us, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, so let's call this meeting to order. Introductions first, there's a couple people that are new. This is Regina Fraser, she's our assistant finance director. And this is our new ACM.
I'm Bill Coffman.
Bill Coffman. And I don't know, you wanna go around real quick?
Sure. Good morning, everybody, happy Monday. My name is Stephen Alexander, partner with the PFM.
We usually see you on.
Yes.
Yeah.
I can be anywhere.
You're bigger.
Add water or grow.
I am Kim Mikely with Sykes Investment Advisors, and I'm representing Mike Sebesta, typically attends the meeting.
David Siegel, Sovereign Asset Management.
John Griffith, Cap Trust Advisors.
Jim Hilton, City Council.
Cindy Kelly, Budget. Mary Ann Davis, Finance Director.
Good morning, John Zobel, City Manager.
All right, that kind of was cool. All right. We need to approve in 2 minutes, August 3rd meeting.
Motion to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Yeah.
Anybody else have a question?
Mayor Bell, John. We're approving the minutes. All in favor?
Aye.
All right. October 5th minutes from our special meeting.
Motion to approve.
Second.
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
All right. Okay, reports. Stable River. Sykes, I have them for this.
Yes, actually, Stable River was integrated into Sykes.
Yeah, we need to change that title. Yeah, I got that.
No problem, no problem. It's a, you know, an evolution.
Yeah.
All right, so you're ready? All right, well, thank you for inviting us here today. We obviously appreciate the business. For the quarter, investment grade fixed income outperformed many of the risk assets in the third quarter. We saw stocks down about 6.4%. High yield was down about that. If you look at lower quality high yield, they were down about 29%. So when you look at treasuries, on average, treasuries earned about 1.75%. Securitized assets did fairly well also. Basically, it was a risk-off quarter. in that investors were reacting to fears around the global economic growth. There was questioning as it related to that. Slowdown in China and other broader emerging markets. It turned out to be one of the worst quarters for other risk assets since third quarter of 2011. In general, the higher the beta that you saw in that asset class, the weaker the performance. So there was obviously this flight to quality where monies flowed into treasuries, and you saw the five-year treasury for the quarter was down about 29 basis points, which return is up. The 10-year was down 32, and the 30-year was down about 27 basis points, and the 30-year return for the quarter was well over 5%. There was a lot of Fed rhetoric during the summer that kept expectations for a rate hike. At the mid-September meeting, however, the markets were generally expecting a hawkish hold or a dovish hike. And what we mean by that is a hawkish hold would be where the Fed left interest rates unchanged, but their statement and then the conference that followed would have said that they were close to hiking. Now, a dovish hike would have meant that they would have raised the rates in the statement and the press conference. They would be emphasizing that rates would be very gradual increase, very deliberate and limited. But instead, we got this dovish hold, which with their press conference, that was even dovish. So everything was caused the markets to have a bit of uncertainty. Risk assets sold off the last 2 weeks of the quarter. And one thing that we saw from their comments was that not only were they focused on inflation and GDP growth, but they added additional factors. And that was a little bit of a surprise in their deliberations. They mentioned factors such as general financial conditions, market instability, China, emerging market, the U.S. dollar growth, and this kind of out-of-consensus decision surprised the market. And in turn, you had various Fed speakers follow up with various speaking engagements and trying to reassure the market, whatever as far as their statement, and claiming that a rate increase was still on the table. So at the October gathering, the FOMC delivered a hawkish statement. So they placed December meeting where there's still a possibility of a rate hike. Basically, the perception is that the Fed appears afraid to kind of make a move, that it might cause a sell-off in financial assets, and they want to increase rates when there's less volatility. But when they start talking about it and being transparent about it, it then in turn causes volatility. So it's kind of a catch-22 there. Our view remains that the FOMC will not hike in 2015, and any tightening would be in 2016, and it will be driven more by market conditions. We feel that what's more important is the pace and the trajectory once we start getting into a hike cycle. We feel that's more important to focus in on than just obsessing about when will be the first rate hike. So once it begins, we feel that it will be very deliberate, very gradual. One thing that they have is that the target rate for the Fed target for 2017, I think, is 3.5%. We think that that's going to be well less than that, probably more like 2. So until they start moving that number down, we're still going to see some volatility in the market. If you look on the screen here, we've got some economic information. And just talking a little bit about GDP, For the first half of the year, we had GDP at 2.25. Third quarter GDP is estimated to be about 1.5, and we're anticipating a bounce back for the fourth quarter to be about 2.5. So the full year, we're anticipating to be about 2.1%, which is about where GDP has averaged since the recovery, which is 6 years in the making. So we're kind of just muddling along. You know, obviously you've got headwinds with Euro, the China, and so forth. As it relates to labor markets, those conditions we still think remain solid. Payroll growth has averaged about 198,000 a month in 2015, a little less than 2014, which was running about 260,000. But one thing to keep in mind is we look at the labor force participation rate, and it is still, it's at a 38-year low. So it's at 62.4%, which is where we saw that rate in October of 1977. Looking at housing, housing has improved. However, the recovery has been more in the multifamily sector. And until we start seeing improvement in first-time home buyers and trade-up in, you know, trade-up as far as within a single-family market, you know, much of the focus or improvement has been in multifamily, where you've got investors and developers in that segment of the market. Certainly, we've got the slowdown in China, which is weighing down global growth, and that in turn is putting pressure on commodities. You know, you've got Japan in a recession. Europe is, you know, relatively flat. And you've just got these global growth headwinds that we're having to deal with that could be challenging. Our view is, since we're focused a bit on the longer end of the curve, 1 to 10 year area, our view is that the 10-year is going to be in a trading range of about 2 to 2.5%. And if we happen to break out from that, we feel that it would be more on the down lower side of 2% than above 2.5%. And we have a 50-50 chance in our estimations that we could hit lower levels in a 10-year, where it reached a 138. So we're looking at growth and so forth, but we feel that we're going to be in a trading range of 2 to 2.5, but if there's any potential for it being lower, it would be on the lower south of 2%. The other charts that follow, I don't know if you go over those in any detail, so I don't want to take up too much time. This is just looking at weekly claims, where they're still, they're returning to pre-recession levels, averaging about 259. The average is 376. I guess the one thing I wanted to show you was just the housing starts, where it's, right here, where multifamily is the blue at the bottom, and they're at 466, average is 283. But you look at single family, it's at 740, and the average is 1031. So, you know, obviously when you look at housing, housing's improved, but it certainly has not been reflected in the single family market, which we have a lot of mortgages and so forth in the portfolio. We monitor this.
Maybe go over your quarterly numbers.
Sure. So if you would like, I can turn to the beginning.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. Now, how do you get to that quickly? Is there a way? All right. So for the quarter, the return was 0.91%. Our benchmark is actually the B of A 1 to 10 domestic master at 102. Much of the return was derived from the securitized sector, primarily mortgages and commercial mortgage-backed securities, as well as treasuries. Corporates provided, minimal amount of return for this quarter. Year-to-date, we're at 163 versus the bench at 175, behind about 12, but then for the year, we're at 294, ahead by 3. And then you look over the five-year period, we've outperformed by 34 basis points, 10-year by 30. One thing that we're focusing in on is that you've got cycles in the market as far as spreads, and so we're looking for safe income at a reasonable price. With these cycles, you've got a lot of new issuance that's coming into the market in the fourth quarter. It was a little dead in the third quarter. And there's been merger and acquisition talks, and one thing that you have to be quite careful of, that we're mindful of, is idiosyncratic risk, where you've got companies that are issuing debt for merger and acquisition or to buy back stock, and those are typically not bondholder friendly. And so you're trying to be mindful of those and stay ahead so that you don't have spread widening against the treasury that would cause your security to go down in price. Okay. On the next page, we have characteristics. The market value is at $54.5 million, an increase of about $489,000. Durations at 4.06, the bench at 3.99. So we're a little ahead of that. Yield is right in line with the benchmark at 1.89. Credit is AA. One thing, we've changed our format here a little bit such that we can show you the portfolio looking at duration, the contribution to duration, as well as percent of market value. So take, for instance, treasuries. We're underweight treasuries from a market value standpoint at 35%, and then we're underweight from a duration standpoint against the bench at 33%. Looking at investment-grade corporates, we're underweight corporates from a market value standpoint, but we're equal weight to the bench when you look at duration, with obviously emphasis on industrials. You'll see high yield there, but that's really GM, which has is BBB rated by S&P and Fitch, BB by Moody's, and it's still well within the parameters of our policy. And securitized, we're overweight from that respect, and as we are from a duration standpoint, with emphasis on mortgage-backed securities. Are there any questions with regards to that? The next page, we have the compliance, and all our compliance is within policy for the quarter. So,
all right. Great. Thank you. Motion to accept the Sykes report.
Thank you.
All in favor?
Aye.
All right. Next, we have Steve. Yeah.
All right. Well, good morning.
Good morning.
All right, I'm on the very, very short end of part of the yield curve. My job is to ensure that you have enough liquidity once you blow through all your bank balances and everything else. I'm the first line of defense to make sure, yeah, exactly, to make sure that you have enough liquidity. I won't spend much time at all, really, on the market conditions, since I think we had a nice review of that at this point. But here are just some highlights of the quarter, kind of looking back the rest of the year. Looking at the yield curves, you'll notice that if you look at the bottom right hand, you see how corporate single A's are much higher yields than treasury agencies. That's helped us over the last couple of years as corporates have been a good performing asset. We did have an interesting time here recently that corporates actually underperformed treasury agencies. And that was really, if we remember that little country called Greece, that was a little situation we had. We had a flight to quality economy. The world economy was concerned about Greece, so we saw a lot of investors buy treasury agencies. That was replaced by what happened in China, which was a much bigger story, much a bigger story to be concerned about, considering that Greece is only barely 2% of the EU GDP, so it's not a, it becomes a big story, but in reality, numbers-wise, it's not. What's happening in China is a much bigger concern, and that was some of the items that was reflected in the previous discussion. Let's go right to this chart here to kind of give you an idea of what do the benchmarks across the scale here look for us. This is 1 to 3, 1 to 5, and out to the master indices with the respective durations, and then 3 months, 1 year, and 3 year return. You can kind of get an idea of what the period looked like for 9/30, kind of a big broad picture across from treasuries, municipalities, and as well as the single A to triple A corporates. And you'll see how corporates outperform treasury agencies, and the municipals, of course, performed a little bit better this particular quarter. But looking back over the last several years, we'll see how nicely corporates have performed, 138 return versus 67 in treasuries and 77 in agencies. So that kind of gives you a big picture of why we're all using corporates, that they have been providing a really good return across all three portfolios. All right, let's get look right into the performance numbers for your portfolio. And here are the quarter returns. We had 36 basis points against the benchmark of 32. Of course, your fiscal year end is September 30th, so we ended up ahead of the benchmark at 124 versus 17. And then you'll see across the various slices, we've been ahead of benchmark all the way since inception. So really, what's going on here over the next couple of quarters, I think, is a really big question. We have, as you can see, if you look at the previous quarter, been really, really close to the duration benchmark, which is about 170, 180, 181, depending on which quarter we're in. We've been typically running 99% of that, or 100%, very close to it. And we're, you know, we're having this dance with the Federal Reserve. When is this going to happen? The Fed has really put themselves in a box now. They have no more tools in the toolbox. They've got interest rates as low as they could possibly go. We've gone through all the various quantitative easing. We could have QE number 4 is about the next thing that the Fed could do. So the question is, when is the Fed going to raise rates? I kind of agree this is probably not going to happen in 2015. As a portfolio, we have taken a defensive measure this past quarter, the very end of the quarter. We moved the duration back a little bit to about 93% with the expectation that they could potentially raise rates. As we saw in September, they did not raise rates. Really because of what's happening around the world, really has, we have no reason to raise rates from that perspective, if you look at it from that perspective. There's other, you know, contrary theories that we should go ahead and raise interest rates because of the fact that banks are so flush with cash, it would maybe spark people to actually go out and borrow money because of fear of rising interest rates sometimes have a positive effect in the economy, because then, since rates are so low and money is so cheap, if we push the rates up a little bit higher, it might spark the economy because people would want to go ahead and do some financing before rates would get too high. So there's different ways of looking at that as well. But just to be on the safe side, we did bring the duration down for the protection of the market value for your portfolio. We'll be playing around between 93 and 97 or so, as we see, depending on the data, what the Fed's looking at. Inflation is running very low, 1.8, 1.9%, depending where you are in the country. We know that the job market is not as strong. There's even some talk of potential recession in the next year or two. So we'll have to see what happens. But unfortunately, the Fed doesn't have a lot of tools in the toolbox to get us through the next sort of recessionary time frame. So we'll have to see how that plays out. The yield on maturity cost is another important number. It's at a 111. It's probably one of the better numbers we've seen over the last 5-6 years, because if you can remember, yields have been so low that the yield on cost, which has nothing to do with market value, has been a relatively low number. But it's been getting better and better as essentially yields in this area of the yield curve have moved up over the last couple of years. So that represents a nice income stream back to the city. If you think of the SBA, around 18, 20 base points in the most current time frame, that represents a good yield back to the city. So when we look at the contribution of the various sectors, the benchmark 1 to 3 Treasury Index contribution versus your portfolio, You can see that corporate's AAA actually did very well this past quarter, returned about 64 basis points versus the Treasury agencies about 39.21. And if you looked at previous quarters, it was actually just the opposite. When we had the flight to quality, corporates performed very low. I should say very low, a few basis points lower than Treasury. But that's usually not the norm. Usually corporates are outperforming. So we've seen a reversal of the June 30th quarter to more of a typical spread comparison between the various sectors. Maturity distribution, or I should say the sector distribution here and the credit quality distribution. We kept pretty much, as far as the asset allocation, we didn't make any significant tactical changes. The strategic plan is still in place. Nothing really changed from that standpoint. Most likely, we would be adding additional asset backs going forward, as they are a good asset class, have a good rate of return, high credit quality. Of course, the transparency on the asset backs, the ones we're buying compared to the ones that were in trouble during the credit crisis, are two different situations. These are credit card and car receivable type asset back, as opposed to the SEIB and those type of structures that we saw during the credit crisis. But from a tactical standpoint, nothing a major change during this particular quarter. And you'll notice that the credit quality is really weighted towards the AA+. That's, of course, S&P's credit rating, and Moody's, of course, would be AAA on credit agencies. Now, on this chart, you'll see what we sort of did from a tactical perspective in this past quarter from a maturity distribution standpoint. You'll notice that we peeled back a little bit the five and over, and also in the 3 to 4 year, brought back a little bit and pushed it into the 1 to 2 year. As you'll see, a little 45% versus 43. Not major change, but it was enough to bring the duration down. We are holding the 8.7 in the 6 months and under 6 months area. Really is our ammunition and rates to go if we have ability to right away immediately take advantage of that. So that's the balancing act that we're performing to kind of make sure we have the market value protected, but also have enough ammunition if rates rise. We can move very quickly to satisfy that opportunity. Compliance-wise, we've checked all the compliance and everything that versus your investment policy is in compliance. It's important to realize something here that I don't think we've talked about this in the past recent couple of years, that when you think of your investment policy and all the various other requirements, you have to think about it. Your policy is very customized, very unique to the city, so it's important to, when you're doing comparisons, you keep that in mind when you're looking at, of course, the benchmark. It's probably the best way to look at it. But from an overall perspective, I know that organizations like to compare themselves around the state and say, what are you doing, what are you doing? But keep in mind that your policy is very, very customized, very detailed, has a lot of requirements that other organizations may not have. So keep that in mind when you're doing comparison, because you do have a very very detailed, very very sophisticated investment policy. If you take a look at what the benchmark looks like from maturity distribution in Maryland's 1 to 3 versus your portfolio, you can see where we have made some choices that are going to be different, of course, with benchmark. The benchmark, of course, is laid out in a passive style. That's not by anybody's management design. It's an index. And you're going to see how we do have positions further than the benchmark, and we have positions less than the benchmark, as we've been kind of in a position that way for some time. The investment policy, probably the most important part, is what's permitted, and then what are the percentages allocations. In this particular presentation that we provide each month to you, will show you that everything that is permitted is within its right asset allocations. This is from a sector level, and then from an individual limitation. The next two pages will show each issuer and then what is the issuer limitation. I did want to point out that the investment policy does allow for 5% for corporates, and you'll notice that our corporate holdings are quite substantially less than that on an individual basis. and that's to help ensure that you have lots of diversification and not any one issuer is taking over the entire portfolio. So I think that's really important.
Are you having to compromise at all in order to stay in that parameter? Like maybe you have, I mean, I'll just pick on J.P. Morgan.
Sure.
That's 5%. You know, J.P. Morgan's a bank that has an issue, but let's say they have a good issue that you have to ignore because you're compelled to stay within that.
There will be times where, sure, you start drinking the Kool-Aid, you don't want to stop, but I think that's part of the discipline of investments, that even though that the investment is providing a great rate of return, you get to the limit and that's it.
But is there a way of coming back? I know it's part of our policy here, but is there an avenue to come back just to say there is something that you find really attractive?
Well, I think through this quarterly meeting, we have that discussion, and if there is a particular issuer, we could come back and have a discussion. But I think in a long-term basis, it's probably not the healthiest thing to do. I think that you stick to the limits.
Yeah.
And I think over time, that serves you well.
But at the same time, I know supply is somewhat limited.
Yeah, supply is certainly limited. Yeah, no, from that standpoint, supply is limited. It is challenging from a corporate sector because the corporate issuance is not as strong as it has been in previous years. So you're right. It does make it more challenging. We've gotten around that by a lot of the industrials have been active as opposed to the financials. But from a sector standpoint, yes, certainly issuers are not as robust as they used to be. I'm hoping that will change here if the economy gets a little bit better. But that is always a concern from that standpoint. One of the ways we've helped to mitigate that situation is by using more asset backs.
Okay.
Asset backs, another corporate form of issuance, different structure. However, it does allow us access into the corporate, and also your percentages help us sort of make up for what's not available in the right. Corporate bond issuance. So between the two, I think you have a pretty good
support. But there's enough out there that you don't have money just laying idle.
No. That situation is not right. Okay. Right. That's a good point.
Asking a similar question slightly different way. Is there anything about the policy as it's currently written that your discipline through that policy? It is constraining you or making it difficult to do your job?
No, I don't think so. I think, over the years, the policy has been, improved. We made some modifications just in the last, 3-4 years. I think we're in pretty good shape from my perspective. I think we have a fair benchmark. I think we have a good asset allocation rules. We have a good list of permitted investments, which I think are suitable for this type of portfolio. So I think overall, I think we're in pretty good shape.
Okay, good.
And actually, that really concludes my report. We will be on watch as always. I think as far as a Fed prediction, I'm not sure it's going to happen here in December. I think if anything, it's going to be 2016. But we've been saying that for years now. So there's nothing magical about that. It's just that we're a unique economy. We're coming out of this recession very slowly. And as you pointed out, GDP again is averaging 2.1, 2.2. And that's been the average since the credit crisis. So we have not. I don't know if I shared with you this last time, but there was an interesting study done by the United States Chamber of Commerce, and they have their own economist, and he presented a report to our Orlando Chamber of Commerce, and the analysis shows that a GDP of 3.5% is the rate that we need to have in this economy before the national debt starts to come down. In other words, there's enough revenue being produced, enough being collected to start paying off the national debt. And if we still stay in this 2.1% GDP, we are not going to move the economy in a significant way that will be really sort of life-changing for the entire United States. So that's kind of a...
Did they have any commentary on what could help change that?
Well, their biggest focus, and this will get into politics, I know that I'll upset somebody here, but this is from the Chamber's perspective, was regulations and really getting the local businesses and small businesses the necessary capability to expand and grow, and that's where the job creation takes place.
Yeah. they're looking for listening of regulations.
Yeah, so we can help, so they can help small businesses and that's how they can, yeah.
I just need to...
Yeah, that's their take, yeah.
They have a way.
Everybody has an idea.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. We certainly need some.
This is the way the US government finances, refinancing their own debt by keeping rates low.
Yeah.
Right.
Nobody talks about it. That's exactly what's happening.
Well, that's my report to the committee this morning.
Motion to accept the FM report?
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye. I want to get more of the Cynthia Jim show, okay?
Yeah.
It was quiet.
All right, that's all for us. Is that working yet?
Yes, it's working.
Oh, it's working?
Yes. You would like to come over here because I now have the presentation on my computer.
Sure, I guess it's key.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Careful, stay a little fiery in a minute.
Yeah, I've got that just come over here too.
I keep things a little, so there you go.
It's not like a storybook presentation. My daughter's school at story time.
Here we go. All right.
Now for yours.
I'll try not to sound too repetitive. I know we've got a great overview. I think we're pretty much somewhat in lockstep in terms of the economy and in terms of rates. I think maybe where Sawgrass differs somewhat is we're a little bit more bullish on the economy. Bullish is probably a strong term, but we're a little bit more confident in the economy and we're probably a little bit more hawkish in terms of rates. We touched on the September decision by the Fed to not raise rates. It was the first time they really mentioned the international factors. I know we sat here, as Steve mentioned, we sat here last quarter and talked about Greece, and there's really a lot about how much of this is just noise and how much of this will get solved. And shortly after that meeting, it did get solved temporarily at least. And that noise kind of went away and it was replaced with China, which in the grand scheme of things, China is a lot more important to the world than Greece is and has a lot more of an impact. However, you look at the actual numbers behind it and what the actual issues are with China, and you know, it's a slowdown, and a lot of that is just expectations. They have 7% growth expectations, which are not very realistic. And a lot of that is manipulated, and it's not, you know, not a real number necessarily. There's been talk about lately about maybe lowering that, or just eliminating it altogether and lowering those expectations. So it's, China is still growing. It has a huge impact on the world. The reality is in terms of U.S. exports, it's about 1% of GDP. So, you know, personally, we don't try to get too... We don't try to overact too much to it. It's an important story. But there is, China seems to be getting a little more realistic in terms of growth, and we think that's going to have, you know, over the long run, that'll settle itself out somewhat. The Fed in October, no one really expected them to ever make any, you know, kind of rate change in October, but the language that came out was very important. And they somewhat backed off a little bit of that international development and said that volatility has subsided somewhat. So we believe they're setting out somewhat of a hawkish statement. Even in the September meeting, they came out, and right shortly thereafter, as you mentioned, a lot of the Fed governors came out and presented more of a hawkish stance. We believe the Fed is very transparent these days, but everything is orchestrated. Every word they say is somewhat orchestrated. So we somewhat believe that Janet Yellen maybe sent out her, you know, her lieutenants to then, you know, give off this hawkish stance, you know, kind of subside volatility somewhat. So that's where we stand. But for the most part, I think we're in agreement in terms of December. It's about 50% chance right now, and that's actually up from about 34% just prior to the October meeting of last week. So the market is repricing somewhat to a more realistic opportunity of a raise. We kind of view it as about 50-50 as well. March is, you know, is probably more of a likely possibility, but we definitely believe in the short term there's going to be a hike. So just look forward somewhat. I think most people here are familiar with Sawgrass, but just a, you know, quick idea. Very conservative in nature. We have a defensive positioning in terms of rates going up and fixed income. It's our goal to not lose your principal and have that cash available, you know, to yourself for your own use in your portfolio. In terms of performance for the quarter, we underperformed by about 17 basis points relative to the benchmark, which is the Merrill Lynch 1-5 Gov Credit. Looking over a one-year span, there's some outperformance, underperformance as well. A lot of that for the quarter, I'll get into this in more detail, and for year-to-date and the 1 year is due to our corporate positioning, and we touched on some of the how treasuries and agencies actually outperform the credit space, which is pretty rare considering the extra yield you're going to get on those in those corporate names. A lot of that was due to a lot of new issuance that came out in terms of corporates. We believe rates being so low, you're the CFO of a company and you have the opportunity to raise debt at these rates. You know, it's very attractive. You can do a lot of things with that money. Unfortunately, what you've seen is a lot of it's been involved in M&A, unfortunately from a bondholder, a lot of it's been involved in M&A and share buybacks, which is not beneficial to the bondholders. We believe this is somewhat of an anomaly as CFOs in these companies do see rates going up. At some point, they want to strike while the iron's hot and be able to issue this new debt at these low rates. So a lot of that had to do with the underperformance and our overweight in credit. In addition, we are short duration, we take a defensive position. As has been mentioned, rates came down, particularly after the September decision to not raise rates. This is really just kind of a theme. We always say if the fire alarm goes off and we can't finish the presentation, now we advise to go back to this page, read up, and that should pretty much summarize everything. Somewhat of a reminder, just it has been mentioned, the last 6 years or so, it's been really just a one-direction cycle. We've been involved in a bull market, especially in terms of risk. We've most recently, for the first time, we've seen some of a risk-off type event due to some developments we've seen, mostly international. So this, we believe, is a time when you want to be high-quality as Sawgrass is and more defensive positioning. This is the yield curve. Just a reminder, this is the whole yield curve out to 30 years. In terms of our portfolio, we're really just focused on the 1 to 5. We're in a barbell position, so we're overweight the front end, especially in terms of floating rate positions, and the 5-year. And you look at the 5-year, and it actually, the yields came down, so it actually outperformed, and there was somewhat of a flattening in that portion of the yield curve. So that was beneficial to us. Although our defensive positioning in terms of duration was a negative, for us. The actual yield curve positioning and how we were positioned along that curve was a positive benefit. So that did outweigh that somewhat. This is the 5-year over a 1-year span. It just kind of gives an idea of the volatility. A lot of this is Fed driven. Positive news comes out, rates go good for the economy and rates go up. Negative news comes out, whether it be domestic or international, the opposite happens. I think if you look most recently in about mid-September, you see when rates were up and then came kind of down pretty sharply, and that's just the decision to not raise rates. And even though it was somewhat consensus that the Fed was not going to raise rates, the market still reacts pretty violently. That gives kind of an idea of the volatility that we've seen lately. Here is what's already been touched on. You look at the quarter on the left, the government bonds with a 1.7% return, which is outperforming all the other asset classes, especially in the credit space. And you look at BBB, which is negative return. So that really gives an idea of the risk-off type environment and that flight to quality that we saw in the third quarter. This is just touching on, this is just corporate spreads, as I mentioned, were wide in the third quarter. And here's an idea just in terms of new issuance, as I mentioned. We had some record new issuance supply in the second and third quarter. A lot of this, again, is due to, we believe, just companies trying to get in. If rates don't go up now, they're going to go up at some point in the next, call it conservatively, 6 months or so. So get in now. We just saw, and these are big names also. We just saw on Thursday, Microsoft with a $10 billion, 7 tranche new issuance. So these are the big companies that really, it's a set, I want to call it free money, but it's very cheap money. Why not get in now, and why not take advantage of that when you can? And this is just, this won't get into too much detail, but while we did have the spread widening in the corporate space, and that was a negative performer for us, we actually had positive security selection. So the individual names we picked within the portfolio did outperform the benchmark, which we believe is beneficial towards our model and how we pick names. So what I wanted to do, and I'll try to be quick about it. Normally we talk about got into how we're positioned. I really want to give kind of an illustrative idea of why we're positioned that way. So we look at three alpha sources. We look at interest rates, sector allocation, and security selection. And that's how we want to derive our alpha. So first thing we look at is interest rates. And what we used here was the three on the run treasuries. So the most recently issued treasury bonds with three different maturities, just as a proxy of interest rates. So you have your 2-year, your 5-year, and your 10-year. as you go out in the maturity curve, we can have a little bit higher yield. So the 10-year with the 2.04% is going to, you know, much higher yield than you'll get from the 2 or the 5-year. So initially you think, okay, we should invest in the 10-year bond, not taking duration into consideration. So here's an idea of just the expected total return over 12 months. When rates are unchanged, and that's the interest rate movement on the bottom, when rates are unchanged, you'll have the 10-year and the 5-year outperforming the 2-year, as you would expect. However, if rates go up, even just 50 basis points, which is essentially 225 basis point rate hikes, which we think over the next 12 months is certainly a strong possibility, you see the 10-year total return, you know, tail up pretty drastically. So in our mind, it's what's more likely to happen, and you know, what risk do you want to take on here? And we want to be a little bit more defensively positioned for that, you know, for those rate hikes, and make sure not to lose money from your portfolio. We've got here, the next thing we look at is sector allocation. And I mentioned that we're overweight corporates. This is just the index weight, but we're, you know, we take the position of being overweight corporates and getting that additional yield. If you look at the third column with the effective yield, again, corporates with a higher yield, looking at that compared to both securitized and mortgage-backed securities, as well as govies, treasuries, and agencies. So it gives an indication of how much more yield you're getting for being invested in the somewhat riskier type corporate bonds, even though we're going in high quality. This gives you an idea of just the yield difference, and this is not taking any spread duration, so it's not taking the actual risk from being involved in corporates. I'll get into that in the next slide. But just how much extra yield you're getting from, you know, being in those corporate bonds. So no matter what the environment, the corporate bond, which is the purple line, will outperform values and agencies, which you'd expect with the higher yields you're going to get from those. However, when you take the spread sensitivity, so again, the duration, the risk you're getting from being in those in that corporate sector, it's a little bit different of a story. If you go, this is spread, corporate spreads on the bottom axis. If you look at corporates, if spreads tighten, so you see somewhat of a bullish stance, and you believe that the corporates will do well going forward, you'll have a much higher total return than you would in the government bonds. And that's the environment we believe is going to happen. We're somewhat more bullish on the economy. We believe spreads have widened due to this new issuance, and that's somewhat of a short-term anomaly, and that will come back. So we do believe that's the environment we're going to see. And you do have, because of the higher yield, you do have somewhat of a buffer in terms of spreads widening. And you'll see it takes till about 30 to 40 basis points of spread widening relative to treasuries before you see that negative return relative to that asset classes. Unfortunately, as I mentioned, that's what has happened in the last quarter, and really over the past year or so. So that's hurt us. However, even if you believe that the spreads will stay the same, or especially if you see a tightening, you see there's a much higher total return expectation. So that's what our thesis is in terms of being overweight in that asset class. Security selection, what I just want to touch on is what we look for. This is our proprietary model we put together in terms of fundamental and relative value. What we look for is strong fundamentals from a company, strong cash flows, low debt, and a strong relative value. So how it compares relative to other names and similar asset classes and similar quality. So we look for the top right quadrant is where we want to find our names. The goal is to hopefully have that move from the top right to the top left, which means your fundamentals have improved or stayed the same. It's still a very strong company. However, because it's tightened a little bit and gotten better, the relative value won't be there as much. And that's essentially where you want to hold it there, buy it, move over, and then sell it, and then replace it with something else in that upper right quadrant. And this is just our current portfolio. So you see a lot of names in the top right, a lot of names in the top left. Kind of speaks more to our high quality. It's very important for us to be above that line in terms of fundamentals. So we want to stay up there. And if we're going to err on the side of being too strong of a company with too high fundamentals, that's okay. We'd rather be there than take too much risk and get into lower fundamental companies. This just sums up, you know, our positioning. This is really the thesis and why we want to be shorter interest rate risk, overweight in corporates with a high quality security focus. Here's just some of your fixed income characteristics and that really reflect in terms of duration. You have a 2% duration versus 2.7 for the benchmark. So we're going to be underweight. We want to be defensive in case rates start to go up, which then gives us the ability to reinvest at higher coupons in the future. And I think the only thing I want to touch on when we go over, this is our scenario analysis, and there's a lot of numbers here. What I'll touch on is just, if you look at row 4, that's interest rates moving up 50 basis points. And you see in the bottom, that would mean you have to outperform by 15 basis points. There's a lot of scenarios here. If you look at the consensus, which is the last row of column 15, which is just various economists and various banks, and we've kind of summarized what all their consensus forecasts are in terms of interest rates and corporate spreads, which we believe with the rates coming up and corporate spreads tightening, you'll see kind of hard at the bottom, but we outperformed by 52 basis points. I think what the summary to look at here is in negative absolute return environments, so rates going up, when you're actually potentially losing principal as a bond investor, it's very important for us to outperform. You want to be defensive. We don't want to lose you money. So that those are the type of environments we want to situate ourselves for and make sure that we're going to, if not provide a positive return, certainly outperform the benchmark and do better and provide less of a negative return. Keep that, and there's just your, you know, your portfolio holdings. Within there is compliance as well. We are on compliance, as we've shown before. So that sums it up. Is there any questions?
Motion to accept the progress report?
Second.
What do you think? Thank you. Yes.
Okay, this is the total portfolio allocation. And if you look down below to the numbers, we have approximately $179 million invested with the three money managers and approximately $55 million in money market instruments, which include the Florida Local Government Impact Fund, Florida Prime, Florida Safe, and SunTrust Checking. And that totals $234 million. Move forward. This is a summary of the account. As you can see on the upper left-hand corner, the $178 million at the end of the quarter was composed of net flows of $38,000, investment gains of approximately $948,000, giving us the ending value of $179,000. And on the right-hand side, again, that's the policy benchmarks as we've heard described by the last few presentations. Trailing returns. For the 1 year, the account earned 1.85% against the policy of 2.03. That's a difference of 18 basis points. You know, relatively speaking, given those small numbers, that 18 seems kind of large. In absolute terms, although it's rather tiny, but we also know that actually, I believe, and again, with respect to the presentations we just received, that we took for the year a rather conservative and defensive posture, actually, with all the managers. And the world didn't work out the way any of us expected it to. So I really think that that performance is quite good, given that fact. Fiscal year return for the quarter, 53 basis points against the policy of 63 for a differential of 10 basis points. And again, I would reiterate what I just said about our posture. If we go to the next page, the matrix here on the left-hand side, the vertical axis is the annualized return and the horizontal is risk. And you can see that our portfolio is the blue triangle, and you can see how each of the managers kind of stepped right in line with what our expectations would be in terms of risk and reward. I consider that to be a very good thing, and that holds true as well for the three-year period. And it's true for the five-year period, not so much for the 10-year, but I don't know that any of us really care. Given where we all sit today. This next page is just simply a bar chart showing the overall return over the last many years from inception, positive. The portfolio being the yellow bar, 5-year and the 3-year, all positive. This current year, just a little bit negative, but still doing well in terms of a percentile basis relative to peers. And going down, we can look at PFM, slightly positive to the policy and in the 40th percentile of the universe. Sawgrass, a little bit less relative to the benchmark, but still falling in well with respect to the peer universe, 24. And Sykes, with a net return of 88 basis points against the policy of 102, just under the median for that particular quarter, although you can see that the numbers trailing it was still quite good. So essentially, that would be my report. I could go through the various managers. Obviously, you've already done that. I don't think that's necessary. Any questions? All right.
Would you accept the captain's
report?
All in favor?
Aye.
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 So next part,
all right.
Yeah, I think you want to talk about
it. Yeah, you're going to do your...
Yes, I think.
The information here looks a little bit blurry.
Yeah.
So, let me see. Yeah, it's not any other way that I think it's a projector. It is a projector, it is, it is. I was just trying to fix that, but get worse, I think.
Is that better?
Yeah, a little.
Okay.
All right. Well, basically, what we're going to show here, it is like a summary of all the information that we have been receiving for our management investment. Also for some trust, State Board of Administration, that is FBA, Florida State, and then also Florida Local Governmental Investment. Also, I want to point out that this information or this report is going to be part of our fee for the council. So starting with SunTrust, we have a balance around $40 million, and the return was 15 basis points. Our goal is to get at least 20 or 25 in our account, so that's extra money that we have, so we are going to diversify that, and we are going to put it back to FDA, because we had to get at least $10 million the last past month just to pay our bond for the funding. So now we are in a good shape, so the extra money, so we are going to put it back to the FDA and get more interest. And also for the FDA, we have around $11 million, and the basis is 25 basis point return. For the Florida State, we have 2.5. Let me see, I think my copy is here. Yes, it's around 2.5. And we have an CD that we have like a $500,000 there, so it's going to be mature now in December. So that is part of the money that we are going to discuss in Marianne, and probably we are going to put it back to Florida Local Government Investment. We just started it with them like 3 months ago, and we have been seeing it that the return that we have been receiving from them has been much, much better than had the money just in Florida State. That is where we have it so far. So that is one of our goals.
So Mirabel, on here, it's a $1.5 million in the Florida State.
Yes, that's right.
And $500,000 in the CD.
In CDs. Correct. So the amount is going to be mature now in December. And yes, we are going to move that money probably to Florida Local Government. I think that we have been doing a good with them. I think it's part of my presentation here. I'm done with that. Does anyone have any other questions?
This is my first time, so I'm really nervous.
Very good, here we go. Thank you, guys. I can accept that. All right, so we had one new issue to discuss. I know at our last meeting, we talked about new custody agreement, and the committee agreed to go with CapTrust recommendation on a custody agent, but I think you have some new information for us, or something more.
Well, I can set that executive summary if it's on.
Okay.
Is that available on the machine?
Well, wait. Why not?
Executive summary.
CapTrust.
As we finished up the last quarterly meeting, we again reiterated that the Bank of New York had not really been fulfilling their responsibilities to us recently. Apparently the problem was they went through a systems conversion, and they actually have a number of different lines of business, and I'm not sure exactly which line was converted at what time, but whatever line that you were deciding in, they weren't providing good information. And what we in particular, we're having trouble reconciling.
No,
it's okay.
Which one to send?
Undo your last action, go up top and undo, then we go back.
Yeah.
And then go to slideshow.
Slideshow.
Okay.
At the top.
Nope.
At the top.
At the top.
I know.
Insert, keep going, design.
Ah, there we go.
There you go.
Okay,
and then from the
beginning.
There we go.
There we go. Okay. We were having particular problems with Sykes. They were, at two meetings ago, I guess it was, we were off around $50,000. And we worked with them for a number of weeks through email and telephone calls. And we just can't get them to get the numbers anywhere near the managers. Now, that's not to say that the managers are right. It's just to say that the managers' returns make sense in the market as it is, and they're done. So, basically, we don't feel that they're corrected. And the last time I looked at it closely was about 5 or 6 days ago, so I guess it's possible that in the interim something might have happened. So, it's go ahead.
So, is it only Sykes that has the issue?
At this moment, I believe that's the case. Yeah. But of course, if there was not a report.
Can I just ask a question?
Yes.
Well, what's the issue?
The issue is simply that, for reasons that aren't understood, their balance, their ending balance, is indefinitely higher. It's higher than Mobanics or Sex Equipment.
Yeah, the issue we had, probably before that was, one, two quarters ago, there was a mortgage payment that the bank did not record, that was, you know, would have been, and which threw off your total return number because you were missing a whole large coupon, I think it was $300,000.
Yes.
That the bank did not record in time of the month end. So when we did our calculation, of course, we have that number. So there was a big discrepancy between the total return number.
Right. And part of our function is essentially to prepare a net fee report that is gives confidence that the manager's reported returns are correct. So it's not actually an audit, but it is a way of a committee monitoring the whole process. So I'm not necessarily advocating that we leave the Bank of New York, but I just wanted to have to say that we can't do our job the way we hired to do it as long as this condition prevails. And the cooperation that we've had from the bank has been a little bit less than I think would be required given the situation. Although everybody has their problems. So anyway, what we did at the request of the committee is we did an RFP process. And we did it fairly quickly because we were hoping that they would get this thing resolved and we could move on without making a change like this. But we're running out of time and it hasn't happened. So we prepared requests for proposal, approximately 50 questions to a group of providers that were selected from CapTrust's experience, as well as some input from the managers and input. And then this one I'm going to present to you right now is just a brief executive summary of our findings. I'll state up front in an email to Mary Ann, I recommended Wells Fargo as the other option that you probably want to consider, and hopefully this report will explain why. So I've pretty much been through this background. We're looking for a best fit, industry best practices to find a provider that will work for the city. This is a group of providers that we looked at closely, or tried to. We looked at Comerica, BMO, PNC, KeyBank, Regions, U.S. Bank, and Wells Fargo. And again, as I said, we basically prepared a list of around 50 questions with subparts that were questions that we feel are important for a custodian to be able to answer well. And we actually asked them to answer them in our format so that they can't just throw, you know, a prefab presentation back in our face. So we went through that process and did some calls and did a thorough analysis of the information. I would need to tell you that reading those proposals is tedious. Well, they all start to look pretty much alike. Anyway, we did find that two of the providers declined to bid. One was PNC and U.S. Bank. And again, they declined to bid for various reasons that maybe have nothing to do with anything that would concern any of us. Sometimes it's just they want to stay in a certain size range. Sometimes they want to remove or increase the amount of business in a certain sector. Sometimes, you know, they're just capacity constraints. I mean, there's any number of things you could say that one day they just don't want to play. And you know, on this day, those two didn't want to play. So that left us with the remainders. Now here, this is probably the most important factor, is pricing. They actually, most of them were just pricing on basis points, but some of them had little nuances, and in particular, Wells Fargo had a nuance in that they have a transaction-based pricing scheme as well as basis points. So in the top information shows you how those five organizations stacked up to one another in terms of price. And in this case, you can see that Wells Fargo actually had the lowest price of 125 basis points. And in a combination pricing situation, you can see that Wells Fargo, again, still had the winning price. But the way they're doing it, they will charge on actual transactions. And you know, again, that might take a second to look inside which way you want to do it. Either way is available. In terms of size, again, Wells Fargo came in quite a bit ahead of the others in terms of its size, number of relationships, and dollars in custody. There's one item there that looks very odd to me, and that's the number of clients that Regions says that they have, 20,000. I would be, if Regions was close to Wells Fargo, I'd look into that very carefully, but as it is, I think they may just have a different definition for institutional custody. They could include retail accounts.
Same
thing.
Likewise, the custody staff, the numbers seem to be very skewed also.
Yes. Yeah, it does. Wow. And again, what that would imply to me is that they have a very, very large number of very small accounts, whereas Wells Fargo is institutional, and they have a reasonably decent staff to handle that. So, and then the last factor was that you know, we worked with all of these people, and they're all good. I mean, it's not someone that aren't doing the job properly, but we just had good experience with Wells Fargo. I know that the
Florida Public Pension Trustees Association has a lot of its members use them, and I think that they're comfortable with it. And so overall, you take price, you take size, you take experience, you take and familiarity and interest in the market and so forth. I think they just pretty much fall from the top. So that's
I know our bar pension uses Wells Fargo, and they were happy with them. The other two are going out. Did they go out
yes,
yet? Or
they've gone out. The other two are using Bank of New York, too, having their own issues, our right. police and our general pension.
So they're confirming that this that isn't just
yes,
our advisor.
Yeah. Yeah. And their advisor, like you, basically the communication they've gotten from Bank of New York is, you guys are kind of a small fish and we're not really worried about it, so go ahead.
Well, it's true that, you know, in their world, this is not a huge account, but it's no excuse.
So do we need to decide on that one slide which way to go?
Eventually, yes, but I don't know that I could give you a solid answer right now as to which would be the better approach.
Our operations would certainly have an opinion, I'm sure, in terms of who they were. I have heard good things from Wells from there.
But well, we were talking about the pricing issue.
We're talking about the pricing.
Yeah, whether it be transactional or do flat basis points. Assuming the dollar value is the same based on the assumptions.
Well, could we just run a pro forma over the last year or so?
Right, yeah.
The math will tell us.
Right.
Even if twice the number of transactions that we've indicated, it still will be lower.
It looked as if the fee was low enough that there's enough of a buffer there.
Yeah, about 26 versus 19.
I think in terms of the asset class that we're in, it's a lot, not much turnover,
right.
Not much transactional business.
Yeah.
So, like, not looking at the numbers in detail, I guess it would be very
beneficial. To be transactional.
Yeah, that's what it seems like.
All right, so I had sent a letter, a second letter to Bank of New York telling them that we were still going to be leaving on or after, I think it was November 15th. So we'll still be doing that. And in the last meeting or the meeting before the special meeting, we all had agreed to go with the recommendation of Cap Trust. Still good?
Still good.
Yep. Still good. All right. Okay. So I'll get with Tiffany and work on a agreement with Wells Fargo to be the new custody agent.
Sounds good.
All right. Okay. That'd be great. Thank you.
Sure.
The last thing there is just the CPE for 2015. I think everybody's in good shape.
Yes.
Mirabelle has some paperwork.
So again, that's going to show who are the members of the board. And everybody's in compliance.
Yay!
Good job,
that
everybody.
Any other things to discuss? If not, we are adjourned.
That's it. No 2 hour meetings.
Thank you, Bill.
Thank you very well.
I don't apologize for the inconvenience that we had this morning. None of you. What's my face?
So that, this is our new.
This is our. That's right.
And when Marie was using it, she said it was kind of fuzzy, but I think it has to do with the older laptop.
Yeah. Yeah, because Scott was telling me that, because this is.